The title for this service is Misery Poker and Other Comforting Connections to be Found in Common Suffering. I first learned to play misery poker in university. I had a job driving the shuttle van, and around exam time, my fellow students would board the van, and at the least provocation, the game would begin. Hey, how's it going? Ugh, I've got a biology final on Monday, a physics final on Tuesday, and a 20-page history paper due on Wednesday. Then someone else would pipe up. I've got two final exams, that same history paper, and a 25-page English paper. I haven't slept more than 3 hours a night for days. And so on. The game did have a competitive edge to it. But it was all in good fun. And the strange thing about it was that even though we were all complaining about our work and sleeplessness and the very real anxiety it was provoking, there was something comforting about the camaraderie of it all. We were not alone in our misery. A couple of years into my marriage with Shauna, I noticed that there was a slight generalizable difference between Shauna's friends and my friends. Shauna's friends are, by and large, incredibly confident. Mine are, well, less so. The kind of people I gather as friends have some sort of vulnerability that shows. If I meet someone and they seem too polished, too confident, too together, I generally think, lovely, interesting, inspiring person, but not likely to become a good friend. I tend to lean toward people who struggle with depression or anxiety, people who worry about not being good enough, not being good enough parents or partners or citizens of the world, people who struggle and are open about their struggles. Of course, as it turns out, the more I got to know Shauna's friends, even the most confident ones, the more I saw that they have vulnerabilities too. No one has a perfect life. Most people have experienced loss, grief, and just regular sadness. Most people have in their lives some relationships that are complicated, be it with family or friends or coworkers. Most people are periodically met with life puzzles that are hard to figure out and life challenges that are hard to hold. Financial anxiety, personal illness, taking on the role of caregiver for a loved one, watching a child struggle with difficulties you can't control. All these are conversations I cherish, conversations about how we get through the ups and downs of human living. Even when we don't figure anything out, even when nothing gets fixed, there's something comforting, I find, in sharing the stories of our struggles. It brings to mind the quotation Reverend Shauna shared last Sunday from Stanford psychologist Kelly McGonigal. To feel less lonely in your stress, two things help. The first is to increase your awareness of other people's suffering. The second is to be more open about yours. Know someone personally to feel a kinship with their stories of suffering. So much art operates on this principle. How many times have you been brought to tears by a novel or a piece of music or other art that speaks of a sadness or a struggle that reflects your own feelings or experience? The artist doesn't even have to be living. Larry already mentioned Van Gogh, and later I'll come back to him. Another person that comes to mind is Virginia Woolf. She's the one who wrote the groundbreaking essay in 1929, A Room of One's Own, in which she argues that, quote, a woman must have money and a room of her own if she is to write fiction, end quote. It struck a chord with female writers, but also with women in general, women of the era who felt confined by the narrow box of domestic chores and relationships, who had no space to be by themselves, no time to think without interruption. Virginia Woolf articulated a compelling case for this truth. A woman needs space, literal and figurative, to realize her full intellectual and creative potential. Virginia Woolf was a brilliant essayist and novelist. Her journals also told of her struggles with mental illness. Over the years, many have been moved by her writing and experiences. You may recall The Hours, which was both a novel and a film, about Virginia Woolf and two other women who were influenced by her in later generations, a 1950s housewife and a contemporary New Yorker. They are connected by threads of common suffering and struggle, threads of common humanity. There's a song by the Indigo Girls that beautifully expresses this sense of connection over time and how a sense of common suffering can also be paradoxically redeeming, even comforting. The song title is Virginia Woolf. I will post a link on Facebook to the whole song. For now, I'll just read an excerpt of the lyrics. The songwriter writes, they published your diary, and that's how I got to know you. The key to a room of your own and a mind without end. And here's a young girl on a kind of a telephone line through time, and the voice at the other end comes like a long-lost friend. So I know I'm all right. Life will come and life will go. Still, I feel it's all right, because I just got a letter to my soul. Then the songwriter references her own struggles with writing, with feeling like she matters. Quote, and when my whole life is on the tip of my tongue, empty pages for the no longer young, the apathy of time laughs in my face. You say, each life has its place. Having received that comforting counsel, the songwriter tries to return the favor, talking to Virginia Woolf across time about the critics she was up against and the suffering she endured. Quote, the hatches were battened, the thunderclouds rolled, and the critics stormed. The battle surrounded the white flag of your youth. If you need to know that you weathered the storm of cruel mortality, 100 years later, I'm sitting here living proof. So you know you're all right. Life will come and life will go. It's all right. Each life has its place. I said I'd get back to Van Gogh. He was actually the inspiration for this entire service. It started with a visit to a museum. The museum had an exhibit featuring Van Gogh, drawings and paintings collected by one Helen Kruller-Merler, who eventually offered her whole art collection so it could be experienced and enjoyed by the public. With gratitude to all who make public viewing of great art possible, I perused the walls. struck again by the difference between a print and a real painted with paint painting. I relished the rich colors and the swirly, goopy textures that make you want to taste it, or at least touch it. There were two images that struck me in particular. The first one had no color and little texture. Mourning woman seated on a basket. It's one of Van Gogh's earlier works, from a time when many of his subjects were peasant laborers portrayed in dark and somber tones. I stood in front of this drawing for a while. I wondered then, and I still wonder now, why was I so drawn to it? If you feel the same way, why are you drawn to it? I wanted to sit with her, like the kid who helps their friend cry over the broken bicycle. I don't just feel sadness, though. I feel, I don't know, recognition, human connection. We've all been there. As I walked on, I found this similarly arresting image, At Eternity's Gate, painted in 1890, 2 months before Van Gogh's death. The little plaque next to the painting explained that Van Gogh painted this during a stay at an asylum for mental illness called Saint-Rémy-de-Provence. Quote, in the asylum at Saint-Rémy, Vincent often feels depressed and nostalgic for earlier times. He conceives of a plan to make a series of reminiscences of the North and asks Theo to send him his old drawings. He wants to apply his new method of working to his earlier themes. A drawing from 1882 serves as the basis for this painting of a sorrowing old man. End quote. Then there was a paragraph that described how the painting came into Mrs. Kröller-Merle's collection 23 years later. Quote, Anton Kröller-Merle gave this painting to his wife in 1913 on the occasion of their silver wedding anniversary. Helen finds it one of the most magnificent works of Van Gogh, and she prefers to display it in a separate room. She writes, if one paints suffering in such a way, then one no longer feels it as suffering. One no longer suffers from it at that moment, but one knows that it is a necessity, and that realization gives solace. I was so intrigued by that statement that I took a picture of it so I could read it again later. If one paints suffering in such a way, then one no longer actually feels it as suffering. One no longer suffers from it at that moment, but one knows that it is necessary, and that realization gives solace. Is that why I'm drawn to these images? Is that why I feel more than just sad when I look at it? Sad, but also connected through our shared human condition. After the museum tour, when we were all comfortably seated back on our tour bus, our heads swimming with images of what we'd just seen, the tour guide played for us a song about Vincent Van Gogh by Don McLean. As we transition to the song now, I invite you to settle into your seats and take some deep breaths.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze, reflecting Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night, portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget, like the strangers that you've met. The ragged men in ragged clothes, a silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will.
So sad, and yet moving too. Weathered faces lined in pain are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. In what ways have you been touched by suffering expressed in art, writing, painting, song? How about poetry? Consider this short reading from On Being by Parker Palmer, featuring a poem by Gregory Orr. The article is entitled, "Your Heart Can Break Open Without Breaking Apart." Parker Palmer writes, "Who among us hasn't known heartbreak? There's the child who suffers from bullying, the young adult who suffers from unrequited love, the person in midlife who sees a marriage or career fail, the elder who endures the death of a loved one closest to their heart." Here is a poem by Gregory Orr about the heart that's been broken open, but not broken apart. Some say you're lucky if nothing shatters it. But then you wouldn't understand poems or songs. You'd never know that beauty comes from loss. It's deep inside every person, a tear tinier than a pearl or thorn. It's one of the places where the beloved is born. End quote. Parker Palmer sums it up. Or, whose own experience with heartbreak often shows up in his poetry, reminds us that loss can allow us to experience beauty and give and receive love more fully than we could before our hearts were broken open. May it be so for all whose hearts are broken. End quote. So that was it, Misery Poker and Other Comforting Connections to be Found in Common Suffering. What writers or artists or musicians have touched you over the years? What about people you know personally? Think about your own life journey and the particular challenges that you have experienced along the way, from the challenges of your youth through to the particular challenges of your current life stage. Along that road, have you found others who shared struggles similar to your own? A support group for grief or addiction? A friend who worried about the same kinds of things that you worried about? A person who shared a story of loss that resonated with your own? What companions have you found along the way? And now, in whom do you confide now? Who confides in you? The words of McGonagall refrain, to feel less lonely in your stress, two things help. The first is to increase your awareness of other people's suffering. The second is to be more open about yours. This is one of the reasons we gather in UU community, though it's also true that making connections, especially at first, can be hard. It can feel awkward. We long for connection and yet often shy away from the risk of it. It takes deliberate effort, which is why we are encouraging you to sit with someone you don't know at the super today. Practice our first principle. Reach out and affirm someone's inherent worth and dignity with a warm smile and enjoy getting to know them and their story. Lots of people have friendly conversations here on Sunday, but still long for a deeper connection. This is the issue that will be addressed in Reverend Shauna's workshop today. If you would like to feel more connected, if you want to help shape our community so that these meaningful connections are strengthened for everyone, please consider attending. Get your soup early so you can be ready to meet in the farmhouse at 12:30. May we all tell our stories from deep inside. May we listen with a loving mind. May we hear our voices in each other's words. And in the sharing, may we thus find comfort, strength, and connection. Blessed be, and amen.